Ansarullah movement says it's hit an important target at Saudi Arabia's Abha airport in retaliation for Saudi airstrikes in Yemen. Former European Central Bank chief Mario Draghi is sworn in as Italy's new prime minister. Riot police in Chile's capital, Santiago, clash with anti-government protesters using water cannons and tear gas. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us to a situation in Yemen and Saudi Arabia, where Yemeni and Ansarullah forces say they have hit an important target at the Abha airport in Saudi Arabia's southwestern province of Asir. The Ansarullah military spokesman says the attack is in response to the Saudi-led coalition airstrikes in the Arab country. No further information has been provided. Saudi Arabia earlier said it had intercepted a drone targeting the airport. Riyadh launched its aggression against Yemen in March of 2015. Since then, tens of thousands of Yemenis, mostly women and children, have been killed and many others displaced. The United Nations has called the situation in Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Well, we've talked to our correspondent in Sana'a, Abdul Latif Al-Washali, for more details about the attack on Saudi targets.
We don't have further information at the moment. The spokesman of the army said it's an important and sensitive target in the Abha airport. It was targeted with a drone called Samad Thalatha. It's a Yemeni drone. Yesterday also there were operations that targeted Abha airport and King Khalid Air Base with three drones of Qasif K2, which is also a Yemeni drone. They have targeted sensitive targets, according to the Yemeni army spokesman. These operations come in response to the escalation carried out by the Saudi-led coalition, especially when it comes to oil derivatives. They are still detaining 12 Yemeni oil vessels and depriving millions of Yemenis of having their basic life needs. Most of the hospitals have closed their doors and stopped providing health services because they don't have oil to generate power for the medical equipment. So the Yemeni army will continue its escalation until the war is stopped and the siege is lifted on Yemen.
UN aid agencies have warned that 2.3 million children under the age of 5 are estimated to be suffering from malnutrition. They've sounded the alarm that 400,000 of them could die if Yemen does not receive urgent aid. Our correspondent brings us more from Sana'a.
2.3 million children under the age of 5 are estimated to be suffering from acute malnutrition, including 400,000 who could starve to death if they don't receive urgent treatment and humanitarian aid, according to four UN agencies.
We always hear that there are huge numbers regarding human suffering, but the problem is that we do not see any measures to address this issue. And there are great risks regarding children's health care. I think that the numbers are greater than those mentioned in the United Nations reports. We appeal to the donors to take measures that limit children's suffering mainly.
22% is the increased rate of acute malnutrition from last year's figures, which is the highest level recorded since the beginning of the Saudi-led war in 2015. The UN agencies said a lack of funds was hampering humanitarian programs in Yemen, urging donor nations to commit to their obligations.
The United Nations has been talking about the humanitarian crisis in Yemen for 5 years, especially children, but it's only rhetoric. There is a clear reduction in the aid provided to children and women, so we believe that the United Nations aims through these statements to obtain more funding by the suffering of Yemenis.
Yemen is on the brink of famine and facing the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations, since the Saudi-led coalition launched a devastating war on the impoverished country some 6 years ago.
Despite the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the country, some believe that the UN agency's reports are aimed at pushing more countries to donate and fulfill their programs rather than saving the lives of the Yemeni children. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
European lawmakers say the bloc is responsible for the suffering of millions in Yemen through its arms sales to Saudi Arabia. They passed a resolution calling on all parties to facilitate the rapid and unimpeded passage of humanitarian relief to the Yemeni population. Jerome Hughes brings us more.
EU lawmakers are not allowed to show images in Parliament, but one MEP broke this rule to illustrate the unthinkable suffering being endured by starving children in Yemen. The hearing was told that warplanes manufactured in the EU have been dropping Italian-made bombs on Yemen, including hospitals.
And French DCI company is at the moment training Saudi soldiers on how to better launch rockets into Yemen.
24 million people in Yemen are suffering. 50,000 are living in famine-like conditions.
US President Biden has recently announced the suspension of arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the Emirates. We, in the EU, should ban sales of arms or any military equipment to the Saudi-led coalition.
Since the Saudi regime and its partners launched their war on Yemen in 2015, hundreds of thousands of civilians have been killed.
The Saudi-led coalition went to war to stop the prospects of peace, power sharing and independence in Yemen. With Western help,
just in the three-year period from 2015 to 2018, campaigners highlight how the EU sold arms to Saudi Arabia valued at 2 billion euro, while humanitarian aid to the country from the EU is less than 1 billion euro during the entire 6 years of conflict.
Stop arming Saudi Arabia because they are using these weapons to kill the civilians and to make a war crimes in Yemen. You know, regarding the United Nations, Yemen now, it is the worst humanitarian crisis in the world.
Even the European Union's top diplomat admits shortcomings.
Yes, the humanitarian and political situation in Yemen deserves more attention, much more than the one we pay to it.
Lawmakers have just passed a resolution condemning the violence while calling for a greater EU response. Similar resolutions have been passed by the European Parliament before, but ultimately they are ignored when EU leaders meet here at the European Council. The reason for that, according to anti-war campaigners, there is simply too much money at stake. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A prominent Saudi human rights activist has been freed after over 1,000 days in custody. Lujan Al-Haful was arrested in 2018 and sentenced to 6 years in prison. Charges included terrorism, agitating for change, and pursuing a foreign agenda. But Saudi Arabia's silencing of opposition does not end with her case.
When Lujan Al-Haful, a prominent women's rights activist, sat in her car and drove into Saudi Arabia in 2014, using her valid UAE driving license, she was arrested and sent to jail, spending 73 days in a women's detention facility. This sparked her campaign to launch an attack against the archaic male-dominated guardianship system run by the Saudi regime. Yet it was in March 2018 when she was essentially forced out of the UAE and flown back to Riyadh and placed under house arrest before being moved to prison that saw her and other women's rights activists clamped down on by the Bin Salman regime. It hence raises the question that if the despotic Saudi crown prince Bin Salman is so keen on reforms, why then is he so quick to silence the women of his country, especially in the face of a simple and basic human rights demand, such as being able to drive a car?
in a sense, in his own mind, he's serious, but in terms of world image, he's not serious. His actions are very crude. To imprison someone that was not a physical threat of any kind. It seems to me that Lu Jian is really seen as a an exponent of Western human rights ideas.
Many from around the world had condemned the arrest of Al-Hathoul, with UN Special Rapporteur Agnes Callamard stating that the cruelty of Saudi Arabia rulers that kept her away from her family, her home, that violated her most basic right to physical and mental integrity, should not be forgotten, suggesting that even though she'd been released, the act by the Saudi regime should still be remembered. The global awareness group Human Rights Watch also celebrated the fact that Al-Hathoul had been released, with its director Ken Roth stating that he was happy that she'd been released, yet he reminded all that they must not forget the so-called reforms by Ben Salman, and nothing more than a distraction of the real events happening in the kingdom. With Al-Hathoul now back home, what now remains to be seen is whether she will actually remain free, or the Saudi regime, led by Ben Salman, continue to suppress Al-Hathoul and many more like her.
The Saudi regime is no stranger when it comes to violating human rights. The ongoing war on Yemen has seen hundreds of thousands of Yemenis die. Saudi hit squads have also targeted and killed Saudi dissidents. And within the kingdom itself, oppression is still practiced against those daring to criticize the royal family. Yet, in spite of the ongoing breaches of human rights, Western nations are still happy to turn a blind eye to the atrocities. Cash continues to flow into the oil-rich nation, not only buying the ignorance of such crimes, but also buying the silence of the West, as in the case of murdered journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
They say that money can buy anything, and this is truer than ever when it comes to the Saudi regime. One only has to look at the way Ben Salman bought the silence of ex-US President Donald Trump following the murder of Jamal Khashoggi in Turkey. Therefore, are the messages of condemnation against the Saudi human rights simply a fake fanfare, ignored by Riyadh at their leisure? With many activists in Saudi Arabia still languishing behind bars, the case of Al-Hathoul is just one of many, and as the Saudi regime continue to pump billions into the military arms complex of Western nations, are the condemnations echoed by the West simply double standards?
Well, of course it does. But Saudi Arabia has been the linchpin, really, of American Middle East policy, foreign policy. And in a sense, that ties in with world policy. If Saudi Arabia goes, there will be dominoes, a domino effect of other regimes, and it will leave Israel much more isolated.
One such example is the British government, who have recently agreed to authorise the sale of £1.9 billion worth of military equipment to the Saudi regime, whilst at the same time preaching to the world that human rights actually matter. Where then did the rights of the people of Yemen go in this statement? Yet for the British, the sale of arms and turning a blind eye to war crimes has come from necessity rather than security. As Brexit takes its toll on the British economy, the sale of arms is nothing more than an act of state begging, something that the Saudi regime are happy to toss a few coins into the outstretched British hand to buy their silence with. As Bin Salman attempts to use his so-called reforms to paint a false impression to the world that he is the saviour of change, the truth of the matter is that the image, the brand and the goodwill shown by Bin Salman and his team is nothing more than a charade designed to fool the theatre audience into the Saudi divine comedy.
Moving on to more news this hour. Former European Central Bank Chief Mario Draghi is sworn in as Italy's new prime minister. The swearing-in ceremony of the 73-year-old economist was held in the presidential palace in Rome. Draghi has a cabinet comprising of a broad base of political parties and technocrats. His government faces a confidence vote next week. His predecessor, Giuseppe Conte, stepped down in January after his party lost support for its coalition government over plans for spending EU recovery money. Italy faces numerous challenges. Now, the country has been mired in its worst downturn since World War II. It is also grappling with the coronavirus pandemic, which is still claiming hundreds of lives every day. Max Civilli says the coronavirus pandemic and its economic fallout are among the main challenges that lie ahead for Italy's newly sworn-in government.
There will be a confidence vote, but this is expected to be a formality, as a majority of lawmakers have already indicated that they would support Draghi. First and foremost, on the government's agenda, the Draghi government will have to fight the coronavirus pandemic, which has killed 93,000 people and has plunged Italy into its deepest recession since the Second World War. The executive is tasked with accelerating a much-delayed vaccine campaign. It has to boost job creation, help businesses, make sure that children finally get back in schools, and last but not least, it has to implement structural reforms after repeated recommendations from the European Union, starting with the civil justice system and the tax system. But the first task for the government will be to decide on how to spend more than 200 billion euros the country will receive from the EU as part of the bloc's recovery plan to try to kickstart the economy.
Protests in Chile have turned violent as riot police clash with rioters protesting against police brutality in Santiago. Police in riot gear used water cannons and tear gas to disperse the crowds. Protesters were seen throwing rocks at security forces and attacking armored vehicles. These are the latest in a series of protests that intensified after the police's killing of a street artist on the lakeside resort of Panguipulli. Security forces have been in the spotlight of intense scrutiny during the months of protests against social injustice. International human rights groups accuse them of human rights violations and using excessive force. Chileans have been gathering each week to protest stark inequality in the country since 2019. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has rejected a claim by Britain, France, and Germany that Tehran is in breach of the 2015 nuclear deal. Zarif said Iran's activities are in line with paragraph 36 of the nuclear deal. He added that the three European signatories, or E3, have done nothing to fulfill their obligations following the U.S.'s withdrawal in 2018. Zarif was reacting to a statement by European signatories in which they called on Iran to halt producing uranium metal. The E3 also urged Tehran not to take any non-compliant steps. After Washington's pullout of the deal, Europeans had pledged to take steps to compensate for the loss and to facilitate financial transactions. The E3 have taken no serious measures in this regard nearly 3 years after the U.S.'s withdrawal and its unilateral sanctions against Iran. Political commentator Tohir Asadi says the European signatories to the Iran nuclear deal are following the policy dictated to them by the United States.
Well, I think the recent accusations we have heard from the European countries is the same trajectory that they have been following over the past 5 years. And we know that after JCPOA was signed and sealed as a Security Council resolution, we have received almost nothing from the European Union except for some verbal statements and some, let's say, lack of commitment when it comes to European Union and European signatories of the deal. Of course, they are basically following the same foreign policy trajectory and the same foreign policy, let's say, behavior that has been dictated by the United States to them. And this is something that Iran could not maybe tolerate anymore. Well, we know that from 2015 up until the moment that we're talking, patience is the name of the game that Iran has been practicing. So it might not be that much logical to expect Iran to implement further, let's say, patience considering the current situation.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for staying with us.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah.
This is a part of a speech delivered on January 16, 1980, by the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini. Subject, Most Superior Migration from Carnal Desires. Every human being is attached to the world, and oneself is attached to the world. Everyone heeds oneself and aspirations. If one migrates from this abode, this dark abode, this abode that blocks us from attainment to human perfection and turns to Allah Almighty and the Messenger of Allah, that is also migration towards Allah, so far as to be overtaken by death, the voluntary death that is exclusive to the saints to Allah who relinquish all their aspirations and are annihilated in Allah Almighty, or in the migration, one conducts, one appreciates death, the same promised death. One's reward is then incumbent on Allah, and according to the first possibility, one no longer desires any reward but the one given by Allah. Basically, one seeks no other aspiration. One wants only Allah.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We were talking about the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini. As we know that he is a person who brought this Islamic revolution, and we are celebrating the victory anniversary of the Islamic revolution, we know that in regards to the politics and religion, he had a viewpoint in which he said, it is said by the Prophet as well, that there is no difference between the politics and religion. The politics is the part of religion. Now, why he was very much emphasizing on the politics being the part of the religion is because religion itself talks about justice. And obviously this justice is nothing new, because Islam is all based on the justice. Imam Khomeini considers the establishment of equity and justice in the society. Why? Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the exalted, the glorified Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, says that we sent our apostles with clear arguments and sent down with them the book and the balance, that men may conduct themselves with equity and that social justice may prevail among them. So this is what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says.
هر زمان میرسد از تو این ندا، بیعت ایران مرد در زبان بخواد، بود شعار تو به راه حق بیران، به ما تو را درو، به ما تو را سلام. خمینی ای امام، خمینی ای امام، خمینی ای امام، خمینی ای امام.
So when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is referring to this, and Imam Khomeini being a true Muslim, a true follower of Muhammad and Islam, a true follower of Islam and Ahlul Bayt, he also refers towards the justice, and he thinks about the justice. And that's what Imam Khomeini is basically referring to. And with this revolution, he wanted to bring justice in the society, and so that he was successful to apply or to conduct justice in the society up to his level. May Allah give us tawfiq to understand the teachings of Quran and to follow the teachings of Quran and Ahlul Bayt and such scholars, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
إلا الله.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Africa Today.
Africans have for decades been used for unethical clinical trials by large Western pharmaceutical companies in clear violation of their basic human rights. There have been many incidents of unethical experimentation, clinical trials lacking properly informed consent, and forced medical procedures in Africa. The clinical trial of the Pfizer drug Trovan in Nigeria is one of the examples. One of the victims harmed during a 1996 experiment in Nigeria by the U.S. pharmaceutical giant Pfizer elaborates on her suffering. Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today, which is focusing on the long history of crimes committed by Western scientists and pharmaceutical giants in Africa. These crimes have come into focus amid the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Since the outbreak, there have been concerns that history will repeat itself and Africans or people of African descent will be used by Western pharmaceuticals to conduct unethical clinical trials for COVID-19 drugs and vaccines. So join us till the end of the show as our experts give you an in-depth analysis on this issue affecting hundreds of millions across Africa.
Pharmaceutical crimes in Africa. Western countries have a long history of illegal and unethical medical testing in Africa. Medical colonialism is a chapter of colonial history in Africa that was not closed and is again in the news amid the COVID-19 virus ravaging many countries in the world. Early April last year, Jean-Paul Mira, head of intensive care at Cochin Hospital in Paris, put forward the idea that tests for coronavirus vaccinations should be carried out in Africa, where he claimed there are no masks and no proper medical care. The research director at France's National Health Institute, INSERM, agreed.
Alors vous avez raison, et d'ailleurs on est en train de réfléchir en parallèle à une étude en Afrique justement pour faire ce même type d'approche avec le BCG, un placebo. Je pense qu'il y a un appel d'offres qui est sorti, il va sortir, et je pense qu'on va en effet sérieusement réfléchir.
This suggestion outraged the director general of the WHO, Tedros Adhanom, himself an African from Ethiopia, who said that Africa will not become a testing ground for COVID-19 vaccines.
It was a disgrace, actually, and appalling to hear during the 21st century
from scientists that kind of remark. And we condemn this with the strongest terms possible. But we assure you that this will not happen in Africa.
Clinical trials by Western pharmaceutical giants in Africa are not always conducted according to leading ethical guidelines. This puts clinical trial participants at risk of being physically harmed or having their rights violated. At the same time, excluding the continent from ongoing pandemic research is not the answer. Clinical trials can be ethically done, and many African countries and institutions now have ethics review boards to oversee medical research.
Amid reports that plans were afoot to conduct unethical COVID-19 vaccine trials in the country by Western research institutions, Kenyan president said that the country will only allow such trials if they follow internationally accepted protocols.
Once we have reached an area where these trials can be tested on humans, fellow Kenyans, as we have been briefing you on a regular basis, we shall keep you informed and we shall let you know, and nothing shall be done in the dark. You will be informed.
Now, for an incisive analysis on the unethical and criminal conduct of Western pharmaceutical companies in Africa, we are joined by Mustafa Traore, an academic, political analyst, and founder of AnOpenEye.org. We also have with us here Dr. Yurga Gelawoldeyes, a researcher and lecturer at the Curtin University Center for Human Rights Education in Australia. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time. And we start off with Mr. Gelo. Africa has, for over 100 years, been a testing ground for pharmaceutical companies from the West. They've been conducting unethical clinical trials for drugs. Now, clearly, medical experimentation is entrenched in the history of racism and colonialism. What's your take?
Thank you. I think that is true, because colonialism and racism is not simply the occupation of land and administering people and ruling them. For Africans, or generally for black people in particular, colonialism and racism has a particularly personal impact. They experience it in their body. So colonialism involves the colonization of the black body. The human body itself become a colonial property. Within that framework, colonial experimentations and the gathering of not just experimentation, but generally knowledge from Africans was conducted by treating the people as having no rights, no dignity or agency.
Thanks for that, Dr. Agelo. Now, can you give us examples on how colonialists used unethical means to conduct medical experiments on Africans?
We can take examples, for example, from Namibia in the early 90s, where sterilization techniques were applied on Herero tribes. We can take examples of controlling African populations using contraceptives such as Depo-Provera in Zimbabwean women, and also in Ghana. We can also take examples where Africans were given the agents that causes trypanosomiasis or sleeping sickness without their consent and knowledge. All of these examples tell us or show us that colonial knowledge or medical knowledge was collected from Africa without the consent, without the participation of the people, and in a way that also deprives the use of those medications or knowledge back to Africans.
Now, let's bring in Mr. Mustafa Traore. What's your opinion on unethical clinical trials by Western pharmaceutical companies on African people?
It seems that for some, in the past, black people, Africans, were the missing link between the monkey and human beings. So we know that scientists have always carried out experiments on animals first, before trying the different medicines on human beings. So this is why it has been the case and for 100 years now, it's still going on. So we've got to be very vigilant with what's happening right now at the moment.
Mr. Traore says that Africans must be vigilant to stop global pharmaceutical giants from using them as guinea pigs. Back to you, Dr. Gelo. Even after the end of colonialism, Western countries, which claim to be champions of human rights, allow their pharmaceutical companies to conduct unethical trials on Africans. There appears to be no end in sight for this. Will this unfortunate trend continue?
That colonial exploitation was put into new systems. One good example could be the ways in which pharmaceuticals, for example, exercise a right of ownership over inventions that they acquire through experimenting on people.
The earliest reported unethical medical trials on Africans by Westerners were sterilization tests done on Herero women by German doctors. The Herero and Nama genocide was a campaign of racial extermination and collective punishment that the German Empire undertook in German Southwest Africa, now Namibia, against the Herero and the Nama people. It is considered the first genocide of the 20th century. It took place between 1904 and 1908. Despite being one of the richest countries in the world, Germany is yet to compensate the descendants of women who suffered unethical tests in the hands of German scientists during the colonial era. Why are Western countries refusing to take responsibility?
How can you understand that in France, you have people being paid to have babies, the government trying to encourage people to have babies, but at the same time, in some parts of France, because La Réunion is part of France, it's a kind of colony, you had people, or doctors or scientists, sterilizing women against their will. So there's something wrong here. So if we want to compensate, to repair what was done in the past, we've got to stop what we are doing right now.
The clinical trial of the Pfizer drug Troven in Nigeria is cited as one of the outstanding examples of impunity by Western pharmaceutical companies in Africa. In 1996, Kano State in Nigeria suffered a major meningitis outbreak. Top United States pharmaceutical company Pfizer decided to conduct clinical trials to test a drug it was developing. Pharmaceutical crimes in Africa.
The drug had not yet been approved in the United States, where parents were not willing to put up their children as guinea pigs. Pfizer deliberately desisted from obtaining informed consent from the parents of the Nigerian patients. A Nigerian lawyer rejected the company's excuses that the studies were conducted through a deal with the Nigerian government.
At that time, the person, if there was any deal at all, was made by an individual against the interest of a government, against the interest of a nation. If you get what I'm saying? Now, forget about if any deal was done at all, it was individualistic deal. I don't want to hear about it. Pfizer ought to have known better. Can they do that deal in America? Can they do it in the UK or in any of the European countries?
Now, because of the adverse effects which the vaccine had on the children, including death and disabilities, the Nigerian federal government filed a suit against Pfizer and several of its employees in June 2007.
The government was seeking nearly $7 billion in damages for the deaths of children involved in the Troven drug trial. In late January 2009, the Nigerian federal government informed the court that it has agreed with Pfizer to settle the lawsuit out of court.
We believe that the case that the federal government has against Pfizer is a good case. There's overwhelming evidence of Pfizer's misconduct. There's overwhelming evidence that Pfizer perpetrated all kinds of fraudulent activities and also engaged in this clinical trial illegally. There are victims who are living today. There are some families of the victims who have died who... What they understood at the time Pfizer came to Nigeria was that Pfizer was volunteering treatment. They did not think that they were volunteering their children as guinea pigs for a clinical examination.
In a move that surprised many, the parties agreed to a settlement figure of only $75 million, WikiLeaks cables suggest that Pfizer may have blackmailed the head of Nigeria's Ministry of Justice into dropping the multi-billion-dollar criminal lawsuit. 24 years after the scandal, many victims are yet to be compensated and still can't live normal lives.
Back to you, Dr. Gelo. Do you think Western pharmaceutical corporations are taking advantage of poverty in some African countries by conducting unethical tests on their citizens?
Are not really poor. Poverty is not, lack of food or lack of shelter. That is destitution. Poverty is redefined as lack of what the West has. So how they operate is not because Africans are poor, but because they change the definition of poverty. So that Africans will stop developing their own natural resources, will stop inventing what is relevant for them, will stop using their traditional and natural resources and knowledges to change their future, but instead wait for Western intervention to happen.
Thanks for that insight on destitution and poverty, Dr. Gelo. Now, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa recently raised concerns about the disinformation campaign and conspiracy theories circulating about COVID-19 vaccines.
While the country is in the process of procuring inoculations for its citizens as it fights the pandemic, anti-vaccine sentiments are being expressed by a number of people, including those in higher offices such as political leaders. Clearly, many Africans mistrust vaccines supplied by Western pharmaceutical companies, especially those that have a history of conducting unethical trials on Africans.
Dr. Gelo, is it true that incidents such as the Pfizer scandal in Kano, Nigeria, have led many to doubt even legitimate vaccines and thus negatively impacting on the overall health of the population?
That is a very good example, what happened in Nigeria on Nigerian children who had meningitis by this big corporation. Raises the alarm that Africans are genuinely justified to doubt and are justified to ask strong guarantees, strong commitment that they will be beneficiaries. These experiences show us that there is no genuine desire to solve the problem of life, to solve the problem of Africans. The greatest drive is actually to acquire profit, to make more money. So there is a primacy of profit over the value of life. Within this context, then Africans are really justified to doubt.
Last year, there were protests in South Africa when the University of Witwatersrand, in partnership with the Oxford University, rolled out South Africa's first clinical trial. Protesters say they did not want Africans to be used as guinea pigs, reflecting concerns among many in Africa over testing drugs on people who do not understand the risks.
I'm not happy at all. I mean, this feels like 1981 all over again, or in the 1980s all over again, when the AIDS pandemic just broke out in SA. It feels like the same thing. It's like a replay, but this time they're doing it in our face.
Mr. Traore, you earlier talked about vigilance in the face of unethical practices by Western pharmaceutical companies. Now, can you elaborate, especially in the context of the COVID-19 vaccine?
Keep on repeating it. Every bad thing that we do to African countries, okay, if it is accepted and if no one says anything, we are later going to do the same thing to our own patient. So this is why we've got to be very vigilant, especially right now with the vaccines against COVID-19. Okay? So this is, we don't know what they have in their vaccines. We do not know. So I think, when you have people in the world talking about reducing the population on Earth, you've got to be very vigilant.
In a very selfish move in June last year, the US government bought up virtually all the stocks for 3 months of Remdesivir, which has proven to work against COVID-19. This immoral and unethical decision by the US left none for the rest of the world, including Africans who are involved in its clinical trials. Now, Dr. Gelo, we saw how the US prevented African countries from obtaining Remdesivir. in the fight against COVID-19, yet Africans were used in his clinical trials. What's your view on this?
A lot of Africans from Liberia, from Guinea, from Democratic Republic of Congo were participating in experimental treatment for Ebola. So this medicine was administered to them, and it is by that participation, through that process, that this medicine became accepted as harmless for humans and can be used now for COVID-19. But what we see after all of this happened is the company that has sole ownership over this invention, the company called Gilead, has now is kind of exercising the right to give patent to selected companies and countries, and it is really unlikely that Africans will have easy access to this medication.
Mr. Traore, some Africans are skeptical about COVID-19 vaccines being sourced from Western countries. Is there a reason to doubt these vaccines?
I think this is the West, and everyone loves Africa, but they do not love the Africans. So Africans have to be very careful with that. They have to be aware of that. So this is why this is a crime. We know that when you've got some Americans talking about the fact that there are too many of us on Earth, that we should limit or reduce the population on Earth, we know that the first target is the African continent. This is where you have all the resources.
Mr. Traore there believes that some of these COVID-19 vaccines are actually a ploy to wipe out Africans. What do you think? You let us know through our social media handle. Now, Mr. Geller, you get to have the last word in our show today. Tell us, what should African countries do to prevent Western pharmaceutical giants from using the continent as a testing ground for their drugs?
People have become, disposables if they are not useful for the system. That autonomy which we envision through various kinds of mechanisms such as human rights and others are not really being observed because governments are not observing the dignity of human beings. They are interested rather in protecting the profits, property rights, patent rights of corporations and companies. And governments which are meant to serve their own population, especially the poor, are not carrying out their duties in the way they are expected according to these international agreements of human rights that they signed up to. So I think we need to come back to the human, to our own human sense of dignity, a dignity that we give to life, and respect that life is more important than profit.
Well, life is more important than profit. We hope governments and global multinationals will listen to that advice and stop exploiting people for profits. And with that, viewers, we come to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. On behalf of the entire Africa Today team, I would like to thank you all, and until next time, goodbye and take care.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe,
and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.